This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
Russell Dorsey, National MLB Insider for Yahoo Sports.
30 teams would love to have a guy that say, you're our closer, but that's not realistic.
Can I blow your mind, Russ?
Sure.
I completely agree with you.
We got a first.
Insider and analyst for Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV Plus.
Can we define a thirst trap? Because I feel like in today's day and age, like if I had on gray sweats.
Mitch has now entered the control
their
room.
Their shows more.
Definition?
Dump them.
Definition?
Can I say that?
No!
I can't say that.
Wow. Okay.
Mitch, by the way, Mitch Rosen came in to make sure everything was okay.
Mitch, I'm sorry if you get a call from the FCC.
Russell Dorsey.
I'm Russ.
On 670 The Score. The Score.
Well, that's fun to revisit. He joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. I don't know if he's on Twitch or not. Is Russ on Twitch?
Yeah, he's on Twitch.
All right, then you can join us on Twitch also. Twitch.tv/670thescore.
Always makes it a more meaty segment when he joins us visually and in addition to the
meat?
Audio.
Good morning, Russ.
Good morning, Russ.
Hello, friend. How are we doing?
Russ's face on Twitch was worth it. Oh, my goodness. That was hilarious.
You guys are crazy.
You look like a cartoon character.
That's wild, Marshall, even for you.
Wait, are you on a computer? Why do you have so much headspace above your head?
Dude, it's been one of those mornings, man.
Did you not eat your breakfast? Did you not get your 500 grams of protein this morning?
He got 7 miles in on his workout yesterday. Posted that.
What happened was I made a quick run to Dunkin' Donuts real quick to get my morning iced coffee that I know you love. And I had to rush to get my camera set up. So now we're good.
Now you're good. You look better now.
I do love a good Dunkin' iced coffee. I feel that.
You know, start every morning with one of these because it's about balance, Layla.
It is about balance. Like I heard a personal trainer once say, he told me the objective is to lose weight, not your mind.
Oh, okay.
100% accurate.
Isn't that great?
But I would push back and say part of losing weight is sometimes feeling like you're losing your mind.
And being able to deal with that? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah, you deal with it. But like you're going to be hungry sometimes and you figure that out.
Okay. Well, look, speaking of balance. This series, in a lot of people's minds, was more balanced than it should have been between the Cubs and the Rockies, even though the Cubs swept the Rockies. I take issue with that because a sweep is a sweep is a sweep. But also, the Cubs look really good right now. They're in a stretch of playing 21 straight games against below 500 opponents, and I said they should be able to get through this thing at 15-6, and they'd be able to call it a success. They are well above pace so far in this stretch because they've won all but three of those games.
I think you're a crazy person, Marshall.
Why?
Number one, if you ask me the question, I'm going to answer it for you. If they won all three games and they swept the series, the result was still the same. And the fact that they're playing the baseball that you wanted them to play with the results, like, at some point, it's just like, hey, they're winning baseball games. You're not going to win baseball games 15-1 every night. Like, yes, for as horrible as the Rockies are, you still have 26 guys out there trying to make a living, so you're not going to roll over and die. But they won all the games, so I don't know what the issue is.
I'm with you.
I think it's the fact that, like, for example, you know, Jed Hoyer talks about how the measure of a successful team is how well you're blowing a team out. So that's probably something to do with it. I would understand why that might be an expectation or a concern when it comes to trying to measure this team against a lesser opponent, right? That might be one of the metrics.
For me, I think people think you're supposed to beat teams like the Rockies and the White Sox and the Marlins and the Pirates 10-1 every night. The reality is baseball doesn't work like that. But if you're winning those games more than you're losing, you're getting the job done. Like, we would be having a much different conversation today if we said the Cubs got swept by the Rockies. Then I could understand why people would be upset, or they dropped 3 or 4 to the Rockies. But then they won all three games. And so I just think through the ebbs and flows of a season, it's not going to look pretty every night. But if the result is you're flying the W up there at Clark and Addison, that's going to mean a lot more at the end of the season than if you lost those games.
I also want to point out this, is that sometimes it's a measure of finding the solution. And there was a good example, actually, on Tuesday night, the game that we ended up going to, Russ, because it was a game.
Oh,
Well, yes, that did occur. Feel free to interject with your critique, because frankly, we critique you all the time and it's a two-way street. But also that game was won on the base pass. That was about whether or not you were catching people stealing, whether or not you were stealing bases yourselves, whether or not you were manufacturing outs. The battle was just to get on base in that game.
Yeah, and I think that's something we've talked about throughout the course of the season with the Cubs, is they find different ways to win on a nightly basis, right? It's not just PCA, save us, even though he's been doing it a lot.
He saved them Tuck, last night. Save us.
But that when you have good players, they tend to do that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But the fact that they can win defensively, they can win on the bases, they can win with baseball IQ against a lesser opponent, that tells you that they're prepared for those moments. Those moments happen a lot. Where? In October. When you get to the playoffs and you need to win in different ways, or you need to be smarter than the other team on the bases, have a better baseball IQ, that pops up all the time in October. And the teams that don't have it, it pops up in really bad moments. Like the Yankees last year were really bad at base running all year long. And you know when it really caught up with them? In the World Series. Mm. Not great. So the fact that you're seeing them do the little things well now against bad teams means that's going to come up big when they get to October against good teams.
So here's a stat for you, Russ. In 18 games before being sent down, Matt Shaw hit 172 and was 10 for 58 in 18 games. Since then, he got called up. He's played half as many games, only 9. And he's got 13 hits in 34 bats. It's 3 more hits in half as many games. And he's batting .382. How good can Matt Shaw be in your eyes this season going forward?
This season?
This season.
I think, what's the OPS since he's come back, Marshall?
962.
It's a cool 962, you know.
No home runs. 962 with no home runs.
That's
I think
wild.
The fact that he looks super comfortable right now, there's a plan of attack, it looks calm and under control, is exactly what you want to see from your young third baseman. And I think an over 950 OPS might be a little unfair. He's swinging it right now, which is fantastic. If you can get 8 to 850 OPS out of Matt Shaw the rest of the way, you're playing with house money. Because to me, you have so many guys in that lineup that are giving you 950 OPS. Like, to ask that of your rookie third baseman seems a little unfair.
Right.
But if you can get 800 to 825 OPS the rest of the way from a guy hitting 7th, 8th, or 9th, you're doing really well. And I think the fact that he was been able to go down to AAA, work on things, come back up because we knew he's going to get another opportunity, and he's playing well and doing all the things that they wanted him to do, that shows a sign of a player that's not only as talented as you thought he would be, but has the maturity and wherewithal to be able to withstand the ebbs and flows of, you know, being a big leaguer.
Russ, I know you understand this feeling, but why are Marshall and I unnecessarily hype after the White Sox series finale against the Mets?
Yeah, that's me.
I don't know. You guys explain it to
okay.
me.
Okay. And also, I'll use the help of Chuck Garfine, because I think he had a really good stat regarding the Mets team ERA. So the White Sox scored, they have the lowest in the major leagues, and the White Sox scored the most runs against them in a single game out of any team this season in the 9 runs that they had. And yes, I'm aware that good teams occasionally have clunkers. But I would like to celebrate these moments, especially when the lineup produced the way it did without Luis Robert. I'm going so far as to ask you a question in the picks or the 5 on it that I think is worthy of your opinion. I know that there's a chance that it's going to be more of a seller's market than a buyer's, or there are more teams selling. But could Andrew Benintendi get moved? Like, he has value right now. He's hitting.
I imagine so. And I think if you're Chris Getz, you're like, yes, Andrew Benintendi, keep hitting. Especially if Luis Robert Jr. isn't going to hit anymore. Like, I don't think that's a thing. I think that's a guy that you can look around and say, on a contender, we need a corner outfielder that can get on base, but every once in a while hit the ball out of the ballpark. Yeah, I think that there's value in that. I'm not upset with you guys being excited about the way the White Sox played against a Mets team that people think is a playoff contender, because I think if you're the White Sox and you've now gone through the worst season in MLB history last year, that is now going to get overshadowed by the Rockies, which I wrote about this week, and it is so much worse in Colorado right now. You now go into 2025 with young players that you're really excited about and a plan of attack of going into your future. And I think for me, I look at the White Sox and I say, the baseball looks better in 2025 than it did in 2024, right? Like, you're seeing slow incremental development at the big league level, right? You're seeing guys that, you know, looked like a fish out of water last year starting to figure it out this year. Miguel Vargas, the White Sox fans were not happy after he came over from the Dodgers last year. He couldn't buy a hit. He's been their best player so far this season, right? That was a guy who's been one of the top prospects in baseball for a long time. And, hey, everybody's not going to respond the same way to getting traded, and sometimes you just have those rough patches. But they still really believed in him as a player, and you're starting to see why. You know, the guy's hitting third for you right now. So I think it's important to see the White Sox play well against good teams, even if you don't win this series and you're not winning games, because – for them this season, it's not about, oh, we got to make it to the postseason. Like, you're in a space where you want to see development at the big league level, because that's, you got to be good before you can be great. And I think they're trying to get to that point where you can say, okay, we're good at this thing, or we're good at this thing, and being able to find your identity.
This segment with Russ is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. Russ, of course, the Yahoo Sports Major League Baseball insider and an insider and analyst for MLB Network and Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV+. I want to get into that Colorado Rockies story because we just saw them. We just saw them here. And people are asking, why weren't they beat by a bigger margin?
What they wanted was the White Sox. They wanted to see the Cubs do to the Rockies what the Cubs did to the White Sox. That's what they wanted.
And fair enough. But I want to know why you think this is worse than the worst season on record in baseball history.
Guys, the Rockies have 9 wins, and we're going to be in June here in a couple of days. That's not good. I think from a talent standpoint, the White Sox last year had more tradable assets than the Colorado Rockies do. And the most tradable asset that they've had over the last couple of years has been third baseman Ryan McMahon, who they chose not to trade over the last 2 seasons. And now he's having the worst offensive season of his career. Not good. Also, the White Sox, after their trade deadline, you know, moves where you move Eric Fetty, you move Tommy Pham, you move Michael Kopech, they were able to get prospect capital in return. And then they were able to flip Garrett Crochet in the offseason. And you look around at their farm system, you say, okay, there are like blue chippers in here. There are talented prospects in here. The Colorado Rockies don't have that, right? Outside of Chase Dolander, their top pitching prospect who just went on the IL, and Charlie Condon, who they drafted number 3 overall out of Georgia last year, they really don't have a ton of prospect capital. And a lot of the young players that they have are in the big leagues right now. Like, there's nothing coming to save the Rockies. And I think the third thing to make it worse for me is they have 9 wins going into June, and they play in the NL West with not one but 2 World Series contenders in the Dodgers and the Padres, and 2 postseason contenders in the Rockies and the Giants. Like, they're going to get their head kicked in every night for the next 5 months.
Wow. Yeah, when you put it that way.
Yeah, the White Sox, I get it, Russ, because the White Sox at least played in the AL Central, where there's, you know, teams that can beat them, but they're not world beaters. They're in a division with world beaters, and this is why it's going to be really hard.
Getting for better, too.
Yes. It's why it's going to be hard for the Cubs, although I would like to see them get the number 1 seed in the National League. They might be able to do it on the strength of their division being so weak compared to the other two, but every team in the NL West gets to beat up on the Rockies.
Every team in the NL West is going to make an acquisition at the deadline. I can almost guarantee that. And so you're telling me all four teams above the Rockies are getting better. Like, I saw a stat the other day. They might finish 40 games behind the fourth place team in the division. That's insanity.
Behind the
I think the other thing, and I don't think people know the division. This. If you look at the Rockies front office, like Bill Schmidt's the GM, outside of one person, everybody in the Rockies front office has been in the front office since the team's inception. Since they became a team in 1991, most, if not all the members of, I think all but one of the members of the front office has been there since 1991.
That's crazy.
I don't know how you expect to win baseball games in 2025 with no new ideas. And you just have people in there that are like, oh, yeah, well, Tulo was nice. Like, he was a good player. We got that right. Like, I just don't know. Like, I don't think they have a plan.
Rocktober and was so fun.
It was. Matt Holliday, a dude. But you look at it, Matt Holliday has kids in the big leagues. That was a long time ago. So I think, you know, like, you look at an organization that has at times had success, but that success has been so sparse. And now you look at a situation where you don't really have young talent coming up. You don't really have a plan. I don't know how they're not now the worst team in baseball for the next 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
Like, it looks bleak.
Well, and also I appreciate you pointing out something that we've discussed recently in a different way. We've talked about Will Venable's effect on the White Sox at this point of the season, at the Memorial Day check-in. But you go on in this article about Pedro Grifol. Why?
Well, I think for me, Pedro Grifol's tenure with the White Sox was unsuccessful, and it wasn't just because he got fired. Like, I think that's part of it. But I think when you look at the breath of fresh air that the organization got after he was fired, I think that says a lot about what his tenure meant for that team. And I think you have a guy in Will Venable that I've talked to people around the big leagues that think he was one of the best young minds available. And I think a lot of people were shocked that the White Sox were able to get him. I think the White Sox were shocked that they were able to get him. And I think you now have a running mate for Chris Getz that he feels confident that they can pair up and really turn this thing around for the White Sox. And I think that's really important because it just never felt like Chris Getz and Pedro Grifol were in lockstep. And when you have an arranged marriage like that, I can understand why. And so it feels like we talk about the plan, like the Rockies not having one. It feels like the White Sox have a plan of attack of how they want to do this thing. And it might not work. It might not. Like, we've seen teams that have plans. We've seen the White Sox have plans before and it not work. But the fact that you have one is really important.
Okay, Russ, so let's go back to the Cubs for a moment, because I've been really debating this, because I'm trying to figure out how this wouldn't work out for the Cubs, what we're seeing this season. The bullpen has been phenomenal, even with the absence of Porter Hodge. Daniel Palencia has seemed to slide into this closer role. Brad Keller's pitched well. Caleb Philbar. I can go on and on and on. But let's go back to the rotation. Shota Imanaga expected back in the next 3 weeks or so. So I'm wondering, with Cade Horton, who's never pitched more than 88 innings, I believe. And then you've got Ben Brown, who's never pitched more than 104 innings. What should they do when Shota Imanaga comes back? Should one of those guys be sent down? Should they both go to the bullpen? You only have but so many bullets you're going to be able to throw with those guys.
I think, personally,
yes,
just the way things have gone, I'd keep Horton in the rotation. I'd move Ben Brown to the bullpen. And I say that based on how the last, I'd call it 7 or so starts have gone for Ben Brown. I think that would allow him to kind of get a reset without having to get demoted to AAA. If they wanted to do that and keep him stretched out, cool. Like, I'd 100% understand that. But if you're just asking me based off the question that you asked of which one would you move, I'd move Ben Brown to the bullpen. I'd keep my fireballer in the rotation and just, I'd rather have him getting outs in the big leagues than getting out to AAA, to be honest with you. Especially once you've decided that he's going to be on your big league roster. I think this is one of the reasons that you waited to the point where you couldn't wait anymore to promote him, because it's like, all right, now we want him in the big leagues and we don't want to do this back and forth things. Because I think sometimes teams do that because they feel like that's the best strategy. I don't know if every guy responds the best to that. So, personal opinion, I'd keep Cade in the rotation.
That's Russ Dorsey, the Major League Baseball insider for Yahoo. And, of course, we'll catch your work on Apple TV on Friday Night Baseball. Thanks, Russ.
Thanks, Russ.
Thanks, guys.
Russ wearing gray.
Hopefully, that's just from the waist up.
I didn't even... this is not a thing to me. All right, coming up next, we are going to shift gears and talk NBA playoffs. Do we have... we have one finals entrant. We could have another tonight. Trista Crick, always fun to talk to, is next here on Rahimi and Harris on The Score.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Come on. Well, the magical season continues. The Oklahoma City Thunder are going back to the NBA Finals.
This is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score. What were you going to say, Marshall?
I said that team looks different than the last one that went to the NBA Finals and got beat in 5 games by the Miami Heat. Those players are still playing, though. All the players, well, Big Perk's not playing, but...
the way I just paused and looked at you panicked says a lot. Let's go out to the Circa Sports Illinois hotline, where you can download the Circa app today. No better person to talk about the NBA playoffs with when we know half of who the finals are going to be than Trista Crick. Always nice to talk to Trista. She is the host of the NBA podcast, The Heat Check with Trista Crick. She joins us now. Hey, Trista, how are you doing?
Hey, what's good, guys?
Hopefully, we're just hoping you don't have like a birthday hangover since yesterday was your birthday and that you celebrated not only yourself, but Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the free throws as they get their way to the finals.
Yeah, happy belated birthday.
Thank you. Went to Multnomah Falls with my mom and the dogs and had a tremendous Peruvian dinner. It was just about as cute and adorable as it could possibly get. No raging, just a grown woman family birthday.
Wow. Okay, so you're grown is what you're telling us. I can appreciate that.
Listen, Marsh, I'm pushing 40, my guy. I know my skin is still just perfect and glowing, but I'm just joking. But no, I'm too old for all that party.
Trista, I'm over 40.
We tried to watch a movie.
I'm over 40, and I'm telling you, you can still rage if you want. There's no law.
All right. There's no law. Well, it sounds like I need to be around you, Layla. Mm-hmm. Also, congratulations on the full-time gig. You're the effing woman.
You are also awesome. And I feel like we are an awesome team. So there's that. Aww. And also, the skin is glowing. So now that we've gotten our propers out of the way with the compliments, because it is true. It is true. You got to respect the people's aging where you can. Marshall, you know, ages backwards.
Whoa, no, but not just your skin's glowing. SGA's skin was glowing last night as well.
SGA has been glowing.
And so, no, I'm saying he's been glowing on the court, but I'm saying I saw his post-game interviews. I'm like, oh, that man, he's got a nice little skincare routine going. Of course.
He's got perfect skin. SGA has perfect skin.
He really does. He really does.
And the braids
are always crispy too. There's always perfectly moisturized. I know this is like super off topic, but I'm always in awe of SGA's whole routine.
No, I think it's completely appropriate, especially considering that man calls Oklahoma City home. I'm wondering who's doing all this work to keep those braids extra crispy. I don't think I haven't thought the thought because it's different out there.
Hey, Dallas is only 3 hours away.
He can. Well, I guess he could.
3-hour drive from Dallas. Someone can come in.
He can have a driver.
Someone's living there. Someone's living there for him. He's got a full-time hair care person that he's known forever, I bet you, and is living close by.
I also do want to point out, it's funny because we all observe the Thunder, obviously. And it's a team that has made statements against the Bulls when they play them. Not just a casual game, but actual statements. I feel like Bulls observers maybe know a little bit better than the next when it comes to the likelihood of OKC being in this position and now being in the finals.
Yeah, the thing about OKC is, you know, they have their moments where they look mortal, and then they turn around and go up by 50 on Memphis. They go up by a bajillion on Denver. They go up multiple games by a jillion to the Minnesota Timberwolves. So this is just what they do. And I think the thing that's so impressive is that they do it from their defense. That's like the primary way that they go on these scoring runs is just they get into your jersey. They make life super uncomfortable for you. Point of attack defenders all around. When Shai Gilgeous-Alexander can have 3 steals in a game regularly and multiple blocks, and he's not the best defender on the team by a long shot. You got Alex Crusoe there. You guys know how good he is at defense. Lou Dort finally gets his all defense nod. You know, Chet has his moments defending the rim. So, yeah, this is a team that is nasty defensively, and they turn those into really easy transition buckets. And then they do it at home where the crowd is just losing their effing minds. It's like turned up to 10, and it's demoralizing.
Where is Sam Presti, not just in basketball terms, but in all across major sports, where is he as far as his rank with front office members?
Man, that's it's a tough call, because I want to say what he's done is as best as I can remember, but he doesn't have a championship yet. So if he can get this championship, I think he's probably solidly top three in the NBA of all time. Like, you got to probably say Red Auerbach is number one, but in modern memory, I think he's the best NBA GM we've seen in like my living memory. Just what he's done, like, you guys probably saw the what was circulating on Instagram, where he took Rashard Lewis and turned Rashard Lewis into a trade exception that turned into multiple picks, that turned into Victor Oladipo and Sabonis, that turned into Paul George, that turned into SGA and all those picks. And you just have to marvel at turning one guy into so many pieces that now is this maybe most dominant NBA team that we've seen in, I don't know, five, seven years until the Warriors reign. It's probably as far back as that goes. Yeah, I think he's definitely up there. I don't know where he is. I can't put a number, but it's like it's top five in all of sports, maybe top seven.
I think you've got a really good point. And what's funny is that I feel like has been done time and time again, the trade tree. I'm also very into it. I feel like it's an innately NBA thing. Daryl Morey, I feel like, also did that. It's like the equivalent of the viral story where you turn a paperclip into a house. But
yes,
Presti and this finals team might be the best example of that whole concept working. Not everybody has been able to flip assets to the extent where it's fully realized in the NBA Finals. And you have this MVP candidate who's really the only challenger to Jokic, when you consider. So that part of it, I think, is to be appreciated on its own.
And then you look at this, too. I think the part that we have to also keep in mind is that this isn't a one-year runway.
It's crazy.
First of all, they're ahead of schedule. Remember, Sam Presti was like, they're still learning how to eat their food. That was, I think, last year. They're still learning how to win. This is a team that has the way that they're built, how young the team is, how many picks they still have. They probably are set up, and anything can happen. We thought Denver was set up to have a reign for multiple years. But this is a team truly in the West that's set up to contend for 5-6 more years.
And that's the crazy part, is that even with the way NBA, CBA has restructured that second apron, they can work around that because they have guys, they can just reload with the next young guys who aren't getting paid yet. And they have so much draft capital. If they draft correctly, it can even be scarier. So I just think what's hilarious about all of this is that Paul George is on the Sixers right now. They did not make the playoffs. They're going to have a top five pick in the NBA draft. But you're going to see the Pacers, who built a lot of what they have off trading Paul George. And now OKC traded away Paul George. And that's how they got what they have. And it's going to amount to an NBA Finals that may not be that appealing to non-NBA diehards. Mm-hmm. But still, there's lessons to be learned from all NBA GMs.
Yeah, the Paul George building two contenders just based on his wake is crazy. And both those teams ending up in the finals in the same year is wild as well. And I think what's really cool for a nerd like me is that the Pacers did it so wildly different than the OKC Thunder. And I respect it just as much, if not more, because they never really truly tanked. And they didn't do it through their own draft picks. They got Aaron Nesmith by trading Malcolm Brogdon, and everyone wasn't even thinking about what Aaron Nesmith was in that trade. They thought, oh, well, why would they trade a veteran point guard like Brogdon? And then truth is, he was kind of a locker room cancer, and they get one of the best 3-and-D players that they develop now probably in the NBA. What have they done with, Tyrese Halliburton? He's now turned into like a top 10 guard, and they figured out a way to trade Sabonis for him instead of Fox, which I think people thought Fox was the obvious choice to try to go after. So I love what Chad Buchanan and Kevin Pritchard are doing as well. I think they're one of the most underrated front offices in the NBA. I've been singing their praises for years, and they deserve their flowers. And this shows Bulls fans what can happen when you have competent people in the front office and an ownership group that cares about the right things, which is winning and keeping your people happy. I heard a story really fast, just as an aside, from those who work for the Pacers, that Herb, the owner of the Indiana Pacers, doesn't even announce when contract extensions get done with his front office members, because he doesn't want them to feel like they're on a rope, that their days are numbered ever, that they're even a question whether they'll stay around. When he hires someone, he finds the right people and they stick around for the long term. That's something that a lot of NBA teams just don't do.
Well, Trista, unfortunately, I think that was done here when it came to trying to find out Billy Donovan's extension. And it was something that actually concerned not just media, but the fans as well, because we do want to know what the clock is, you know, and that's such a different way of looking at it, because you're looking at it through the lens of this working and being successful.
Yes.
And then we're sitting here looking at it as, what are you hiding?
Yeah, no, I mean, the key piece, and we've said this on this show with you guys so many times, is like the competency part and having trust in the decision makers, right? Once that's lost, then you start, the trust is gone. Now you're skeptical. You guys are hiding things from us. Why do we not know, like, that these extensions are happening under our nose? We feel like these people should be fired and they're getting longer term deals. That's absolutely fair. And I think that's because the competency piece just hasn't really felt like it's been there in Chicago for so long, like really a long, long time.
I'm sorry. I didn't want to interrupt, but I panic want to ask this question to Trista. Okay, do you think it's fair?
Yeah.
As we talk to Trista Crick, of course, our Hoops Maven, I think that's a fair enough name. The Heat Check podcast with Trista Crick is her podcast. Is this the closest that the Tibbs-led Knicks are going to get to the finals, given the injuries to Boston and what their opportunities have been?
Oh, it sure feels like it. It sure feels like this was their opportunity, because all of the main giants and gremlins along the way in the Mario Kart path, right? Like, have been taken down by other teams. And then you face a Boston team that really was playing with their food in game one and game two. And then the Tatum injury sort of sealed that they will never be able to come back from, you know, this 3-1 lead. So, yeah, I hate to say that Tibbs should feel like he's on the hot seat, but some of the coaching discrepancies early on in the series with Indiana should make Knicks fans very concerned. But again, like, it's hard to say with Karl-Anthony Towns as being his first year, like, is he the right fit next to Brunson? Some of it is roster related. But yeah, I don't think Tibbs is ever going to lead a championship team. That's probably just what it's going to be. Wow. Unfortunately. Aww.
Yeah, you might want to play more than, you know, six guys all the time.
What? You need your guys fresh for the playoffs? Never even heard of that concept.
Oh, I was saying in the playoffs. I wasn't saying, I mean, he learned to finally expand his rotation a little bit, but it was too late.
Only because Brunson and Towns had four fouls before halftime.
Yeah.
So he was sort of forced into it. Yeah, he had no other choice. He wasn't going to go down the way that he did in game two, where he had Karl-Anthony Towns sitting on the bench, you know, all fourth quarter pretty much, and getting killed in the media that way. So he had to switch some things up, but essentially he didn't do that on his own will.
Well, we'll look forward to the side talk videos that come out from whatever the conclusion of this game is. That is for sure. Trista, thanks so much for joining us.
Sorry, I have to do it from the car, guys. There's rain and there's traffic. Yeah, so next time we'll
it's
be
all good.
It's good lighting.
Happy belated birthday to Trista Crick.
It is good. Yeah. It is good lighting.
It is. That's why everybody films stuff from their car. That's why you see all these people with their confident selfies in the car, because the lighting is
just
good.
Glad Trista had her seatbelt on. That's the real winner.
That's the most important thing. Coming up, it is halftime, and I have an update on the drive to 20. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you will.
Is it a knockoff or is it a knockout? I'll let you decide.
Ooh.
Layla Rahimi,
Marshall Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
What time is it?
It's halftime.
It is halftime on Rahimi and Harris on The Score, and I'm seeing something that looks bright outside. It appears unobstructed, and it creates warmth. I think they call it the sun.
Are you saying you haven't seen the sun in a while?
Not enough, guys. Not enough. You know I hate this weather.
Well, I was out of town last weekend. I saw the sun every day, and it was bright, and it was between 85 and 92 degrees.
Oh, good for you. Oh, yeah. Well, we had to be here and see the clouds.
No, but hold up.
And get trolled by the calendar.
Hold up. It was also steamy as all get out. So walking outside, you had a little sweat on your brow, like above
sweat mustache.
Yeah, where my little mustache would be if I could grow proper facial hair.
I'll teach you.
So yeah, no, I'm glad the weather's going to be. But you said 87 on Monday.
Yeah, supposedly.
Okay,
calling out.
Yeah,
right?
We're sick that day, right?
We are all sick. We are sick with 87 degrees.
Sick of this weather currently.
All right, so here's the thing. I think that the Chicago Tribune beat writer Tess Kinney might be in on the bit.
Expound.
The lead to her story is, in just under 4 months, police have made 11 firearm-related arrests in or near the Naperville Top Golf parking lot, the latest logged over the weekend.
Okay.
As we all know, we have a bet going that there will be 20 arrests at the Naperville Top Golf. Did I say by the end of the summer? Or did I say by the end of the year? I'm confident about both.
Yeah, people. It's got to be end of the summer, man. Things are literally about to heat up in these streets.
It's not even hot yet, and they've already got to 11. I mean,
exactly.
Should we up the ante? Should it be double or nothing if they get to 20 by the end of the summer?
People out here at the Top Golf over there are like Seiya Suzuki, man. They're just going to be driving them in.
That's how you got from point A to B and landed the plane was a real art form, Ray. It really was. So yeah, I mean, that is not only the correct way to look at this, as if it is a sports stat, even though it's a news story, but also perhaps they know. Perhaps the Tribune knows what we all know, which is A, the story is going to get clicks. B, we're all paying attention. So the latest story is such. Officials were conducting a proactive patrol outside of the 3211 Odyssey Court business, a.k.a. they were looking in people's cars, when the odor of cannabis drew their attention to a specific area of the facility's lot. Looking inside a parked, unoccupied vehicle, they observed several open alcohol containers and a handgun in plain view beneath the driver's seat.
Yeah, that'll do it.
How do people not know that this is a thing yet?
Are you guys just doing dioramas now? Like, what is this, a tableau? Like, what is this scene? Is this the album cover shoot you're trying to get? Like, I need to know. What? Why can't you just hide your stuff? Also, how strong did the weed smell if the car wasn't occupied? I got a lot of questions here.
Yeah, I think that's pretty loud.
So a check of the vehicle's owner registration showed that when the man arrested did not possess a valid firearm owner's identification card, a.k.a. a FOID card. After he returned to the vehicle and got into the driver's seat, officers conducted a search, recovered a Glock 21 handgun from the car, and found suspected cocaine in his pocket. Okay, suspected cocaine in a police report, like,
Seems dicey.
The defense lawyer in me wants to be like, all right, did you just throw that in just because? Was that like the bonus charge? So, but either way, that is a pretty obvious case here. But like, what's happening here? They're just like...
What's happening is exactly what you predicted that would happen. People just out here acting reckless.
It's like they're just leaving still frames or something. You know, I don't understand. Like, why...
I just want to know why Topgolf. Like, of all the places in the world,
Naperville Top Golf? Apparently, it's a massive parking lot.
But even
lot.
Just Top Golf. Like, golf is, like, it's not really a relaxing sport if you play. I actually just picked up golf as a hobby. It's actually one of the most frustrating sports it can be.
Oh, no, but Top Golf's different. Top Golf is like bowling for golfers.
Right.
It's very chill.
But, like, why it's like, oh, let's go golfing. Let me grab my gun. It's like, I don't understand what Top Golf does.
No, but also, the news is out there. Like, attention.
Do you think these people are watching the news? Right.
People are trying to warn you. This is how you get caught. And people are still like, nah, I'm going to get caught. Alcohol. Gun. Scene.
All right, so
815 more Rockies wins or Top Golf arrests.
It's definitely Top Golf arrests.
Let's
arrest.
Do it. I'm not kidding.
Top Golf
this
arrest.
Is our own prop bet.
Oh, that is the bet. The Rockies. Oh, Top Golf is going to win.
All right, so we set
this is
the,
through the end of baseball
we
season.
We set
then?
The line at 20. Correct.
Yes. Through the end of baseball
the
season,
the Rockies have already won 9. So I tend to think that the Rockies will still outpace the Top Golf arrests, it's but I could
even,
be wrong.
It's not even warm outside yet, Layla.
I can't believe now I'm rooting for gun arrests.
I'm not rooting. I'm rooting for the Rockies over gun arrests. I don't want.
Yeah,
gun
who's
arrests.
The winner in this scenario?
Not us. Not us as a civilization.
Content.
Content is the winner. All right, that's it. 815, you've got it. We will keep the line on Rockies versus the prop bet on Rockies versus Top Golf arrests.
Layla, do you like brains?
Like having them?
People with them, all of it.
Eating them, no. I would not call myself a zombie per se.
Do you like brains, like as a concept?
Yes.
Do you like brawn?
Yes.
What about brains versus brawn?
Give me the brains.
Well, there's a sport. It's becoming a global hit. Maybe you've heard of it. Maybe you haven't. Chess boxing. Are you familiar?
No, but I like the concept of violence and chess.
The game is exactly what it sounds like, as it combines chess and boxing to create a new spectacle that is increasing in popularity. But while the sport is starting to grow as a concept, many people have still not heard of chess boxing or even understand it. That's why I'm presenting it to you right now as part of Halftime.
I am interested.
Chess boxing, as you might expect, intersperses rounds of chess with boxing. The sport generally consists of 11 alternating rounds, 6 of chess, 5 of boxing.
Uh-oh.
And each one lasts 3 minutes. That's according to chess.com. So see, even the official chess people are okay with this. This is broken up by 1 minute breaks. During the chess matches, a single game is played with each player limited to a time control of 9 minutes with no increment. Got that? The winner is determined by checkmate, resignation, knockout, or disqualification by the referee.
What if somebody just punches somebody else in the face and is like, boom, that would checkmate?
That would be disqualification. Now, the checkmate's during the chess portion of it.
That's not the point. The point is the puns.
That might be the point. If a player does not win during the chess games, then whoever has more points through the boxing rounds becomes the winner. So you might want to ask, where is this being played? Well, it started because there was an image of a chessboard and men boxing in a 1992 comic book.
What comic book?
I don't know. It doesn't say. The sport has since grown to span several continents. The first European championship took place in Berlin in 2005. But others believe the sport's provenance can be traced to the 1970s in London, when two brothers grabbed headlines for playing chess after a few rounds of boxing at their gym.
If you can't fight about it, think about it.
And so you're wondering, why is this becoming popular all of a sudden? Well, the major events are top tier in terms of entertainment, lighting, professional hosts, live streaming to multiple countries, all that kind of stuff that you would see in other kinds of sporting events. That's according to Matt Thomas, who is a world champion chess boxer. That's what he told USA Today. The sport is a beautiful yin and yang, and it's multifaceted. I think it's really exciting to watch and be a part of. I think it's interesting because after a few rounds of the boxing mixed with the chess, like how coherent are you when you're making your chess decisions?
Fair enough.
And so I really think this has been great. And even though I don't want to box anyone, I want to kind of do the chess boxing thing just to see what it would be like.
Or do you want to see nerds fight? That's the other question.
I go back and forth. Like, I think it's a perfect mix. Like, are you really strong and are you really smart? Mix it up.
Yeah, I agree with that. 269 says we should do a remote from the Top Golf parking lot. Here's my concern is that if we do this remote, we're just going to be yelling at people that I'm like, the cops are looking at your car. You left your gun out. Like, it would just get distracted. Like, we'd try to talk about the Bears or something. I'd be like, hey, you're going to get arrested. Put your gun away.
Yeah, that's a remote from a really dangerous place, apparently. Yeah.
Also, 708 says the next Mike Tyson-Jake Paul fight should be Chessmate.
Oh, I see what you did there. The better question is, would you want to see Mike Tyson and Jake Paul chess box? That might actually be more authentic than whatever we saw previously.
Also, 224, I don't know if it's on DraftKings yet, but if it is, that would be amazing. Chess boxing.
I also want to know if the prop bet for Rockies wins versus Naperville Top Golf arrests is on DraftKings yet.
We set the lines around here.
I mean, our friends at Circa might do it. don't know.
We should bring that up.
It's not on FanDuel, the official. If it, I should ask them and see if they could do it. Maybe it requires too many props, though.
Hmm. I don't know.
That Jake Paul, Mike Tyson chess game is just going to be terrible, though. There's no way they know what to do with the rook.
The fight was terrible.
They don't know what to do with their knight. Chess, they don't know how to establish their pawns.
Chess
they don't
could
know
be
what
a test
doing.
Of authenticity and wit, so I kind of like that idea.
How are you guys at chess? I love chess. I play it on the plane all the time.
I used to play in elementary school quite a bit.
Chess is fun, but it's no Connect Four.
Lawrence is the big chess master in our 670 streets.
He is. I know he does big things.
Yeah, he will casually play a game of simulated chess all the time. Whereas I'm like, forget it! And then I take the chessboard and just, you know, do the forearm shiver with it. And pieces go everywhere, and it's very dramatic.
That seems violent.
No, I don't really do that. Oh. But maybe in chess boxing, I would. And then I'd punch somebody and be like, checkmate!
And then you'd be disqualified and lose the match.
But the puns! All right, so everybody, thank you for always shouting out the Naperville Top Golf arrests. We're going to keep this very important statistic going. More to come here on Rahimi and Harris on the Score. 5 on it is next. We have a lot of White Sox questions. We got too excited. Experience the fever next.